From the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina, it's Civitalk with your hosts Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence, at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax, but buckle up, and let's wade into the deep end of what's really happening in your old North State.
Welcome to another edition of Civitalk. I'm here with my good friend, Brooke Medina. We're going to be talking redistricting. That's the big story in North Carolina. We're going to talk a little bit about George Holding's race, a Vogue article, Teen Vogue article. Brooke's a big reader. And we'll just end up with a little thing on John McCain. Brooke, how are you doing?
Ray, I'm doing fantastic. How are you doing?
I'm doing really, really well. I'm glad to be here with you.
Same here. I know that we have an exciting show lined up, especially that Teen Vogue article, but we're going to have to hold off, keep our audience waiting and in suspense for that one. But first, I just want to vent a little bit as a parent, and I just need to get this off my chest. I'm struggling because my youngest child is getting ready to turn 5 years old, and A, that makes me really, really sad because my baby's growing up, and B, he chose an obscure 90s character to be the theme for his birthday party, and that was Sonic the Hedgehog. Remember
wow,
him?
I do remember him from the 1990s, from the Sega Genesis.
Yes, yes. I never owned a Sega Genesis.
I didn't either.
Okay, but my friends, I had friends that did, so I knew who to buddy up with so I could go play some Sonic when I was a kid after school. But anyways, we introduced him to Sonic on Netflix, and so he is now insistent that Dr. Eggman, bad guy, not his friend, but he wants to emulate Sonic and Tails and Shadow. So if you guys know that game or that cartoon, you definitely know what I'm talking about. If not, please disregard. I'm sorry for taking up so much of your time. But there are woes associated with throwing a Sonic-themed birthday party because you can't find Sonic stuff anywhere except like the video game at the game store.
Yeah, I wouldn't think you'd be able to find it anywhere at all.
Yeah, and of all things, he wants a Sonic the Hedgehog pinata. So this is creating quite the conundrum for his mama. But, you know, have you ever had like a birthday party? Well, because you've got a little boy. He's not even two yet, but have you done any themed birthday parties or getting ready to?
Well, we're doing a two in the bayou in February for our son, so he's really excited. Well, actually, I'm really excited about that because we're gonna have some Cajun music and Cajun food. I'm a big fan of the Pine Leaf Boys, who are a Cajun band in Louisiana. I'm probably not going to be able to afford to get them, but we'll probably be playing some of their CDs at the party.
Yeah, you can afford at least the Pandora station for
right,
free, right?
Exactly.
Oh, that will be fun. Going to have some Cajun food, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. Definitely some crawfish. Probably some gumbo. Maybe crawfish etouffee. So we're excited.
You like to grill a lot, right?
I do. So. I do like to grill. My wife makes great gumbo.
Yummy. Well, I will be expecting my invitation to that.
No doubt.
I can't promise invites to the Sonic party because I don't want everybody to come over just to see me fail at like a horribly decorated Sonic cake, because my cake decorating class has never covered Sonic the Hedgehog. I only learned how to do like roses.
I'm sure you'll be great. If they're as good as your infographics, they will be really good, bro. I don't know if this is a good transition to talk about Brooke bullying me about my infographics and graphics. We're working on the Civitas project, and I showed Brooke some of my graphics, and all she did was laugh. And there was like a long, awkward silence.
Ray's a bit of a snowflake this week, so just
this
so
week?
Our listeners
just
know.
This week?
I'm trying to show you some grace.
Okay.
But yes, I'm sorry if your graphics look like they came out of Windows 1998, but you know, everybody's got their strengths and weaknesses. I'm no graphic designer myself, but Ray, bless his heart, was trying real hard to make some great graphics for the annual report. And alas,
I think they look really good, and people are going to be so impressed that they're going to write in and think that my graphics are great, and they're going to say Brooke is wrong. So I'll be proven right. I'm looking
you
forward
all
to
just
that.
Keep your eyes open. We'll probably upload the annual report to our website and ncivitas.org.
See, now that you put all this pressure on me.
And you email us at radio@nccivitas.org to let us know your thoughts on Ray's infographic skills. So we'll just leave it right there.
Well, I'm just going to say the ones that you did were mine and the ones that I did were yours.
No, I'm going to like watermark them with my initials in the back. So anyways, let's move on to what our audience probably really wanted to know about, which is the story of the week, perhaps, here in the state of North Carolina in politics, and that's redistricting. Can you talk a little bit and bring us up to speed on that?
Sure. On August 27th, Judge James Wynn, an Obama appointee, basically ruled that, well, essentially ruled that North Carolina is redistricting. They used partisan redistricting for their plan. I mean, it comes down to 10 redistricts, or 10 districts are favor Republicans and 3 favor Democrats. And so this has been done throughout North Carolina history. This has been done by multiple states. They redistrict for partisan purposes. So what happened in North Carolina is the judge ruled that, hey, no, you can't do that. And it's possible that his timing may be a little bit suspicious because he waited until after Kennedy retired. This is Judge James Wynn, District Court, Middle District of North Carolina, waited for Kennedy to retire because in case there was a 5-4 ruling against his decision, then, you know, with Kennedy off the court, it's more likely there'd be a 4-4 decision, and that would favor Judge Wynn's original decision on this. So it just throws some of this election stuff up in the air, Brooke. I mean, we don't know if there's going to be a primary now in November. We'll most likely have a general election, but we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know if there's going to be a general election and another election right after that. So a lot of things are up in the air. You know, of course, you got Dallas Woodhouse Republican Party kind of hinting that things are going to go on as planned, but we don't know for sure yet. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, well, any timeline, any estimate as to when we will get word, because that's a pretty big deal to move the primaries back to November and then actually move the general election over to January. I don't even know if that's ever been done.
Yeah, and I don't even know if the timeline's figured out yet in terms of, you know, we're going to go on with elections as planned until we hear something. You know, they're going before appealing this decision, going before a federal court tomorrow on Friday. So it'll be interesting to see after that what sort of timeline we're looking at. Here's a statement from Phil Berger's spokesman, Pat Ryan, who said, after court shopping since 2011, the plaintiffs finally found an activist judge who happened to be an Obama appointee to issue an unprecedented opinion based on an unfounded judicial precedent less than 3 months before an election. He goes on to say, I'm skipping some of the statement, but he says that the U.S. House majority may hang in the balance of an unelected judge's political opinion is either of no import to this court or is the real motive behind this outrageous election meddling.
Wow. Well, and so at the heart of this is gerrymandering and whether or not partisan gerrymandering is illegal or. Right.
And the Supreme Court has never, Brooke, ruled that partisan gerrymandering is illegal.
Right. So, well, but
everybody's been doing this throughout history. So, you know,
the Democrats did it for over a century
here in
North
Carolina.
State.
No doubt. They do it. Southern Democrats have been doing it probably better than anybody throughout history. And of course, now, especially in North Carolina, they try to drag these cases into the court because they've lost power. So it'll be interesting to see what happens ultimately. If Kavanaugh is seated, that may be good news for Republicans in North Carolina. But we just don't know yet. We don't know how all this is going to shake out.
Yeah, well, and then on that note of gerrymandering, so there are different types of gerrymandering, too. There's the racial kind, which is that is illegal. You can't do that. I think that was part of the 2013 Supreme Court case here in North Carolina, but which was connected with voter ID, too. It was all rolled into one, to my knowledge. I'm not an expert on this, but so voter ID will be on the ballot this November, but it's separated from the gerrymandering issue. So there's just a lot of stuff going on, but there's a lot even revolving around gerrymandering, and there's some nuance there. There's also incumbent gerrymandering, which is allowed as well. So partisan is the one we're looking at right now, which you said up to this point in time has never been ruled illegal
by the Supreme Court. Yeah,
by the Supreme Court. So this would be a new precedent if
absolutely
it were.
Yeah, they've always kind of demurred. The Supreme Court said you guys sort this out, but they've never directly ruled that it's illegal. People have been doing this for centuries in America, partisan gerrymandering. So it'll be interesting, like I said, to see what happens. The one thing that to look out for, I think, is it just kind of throws the election up in the air, because you could have a lot of redistricting going on when you've had candidates like George Holding, who we're talking about in a minute, but candidates across the state. This only affects congressional seats here in North Carolina, but they've been campaigning with a district in mind, with certain voters and certain parameters in mind. So that's all gets thrown up in the air. It can create a lot of chaos because, you know, you're already advertising. The election is in full swing now, so you already got a lot of advertising, whether it be TV and radio. You're targeting specific areas, so this could throw the whole thing
right
out of
for
whack.
The marketing aspect definitely would be a huge headache. Thankfully, though, for at least if this were to go this direction and the elections were pushed back to after November, members of Congress do not have to live in the district that they are representing, right? pretty sure they don't have to. So I think
I don't think so.
Yeah, here. So in the General Assembly, senators and members of the House have to live in that district.
Right.
But I don't believe you have to at the congressional level.
No, you just take a big hit on it from a PR standpoint.
Of course.
I think you're technically right. I know that there's been a lot of senators who've lost over the years in certain states because they became creatures of Washington and never really went back to their home states.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's a whole host of other issues associated with not living or being connected with your district. But at least if there were districts that were redrawn, the members of Congress, I don't think, would have to move. But anyways, whew, that's something to watch. And hopefully it gets untangled and solved pretty quickly so that it's not a really messier than normal election season. It seems like messy elections are the order of the century, though. But what about this George Holding, too? You said you had some information about Holding's
Yeah, the Cook
district.
Political Report, which we've mentioned on this podcast before, has moved it from likely Republican to lean Republican. So George Holding is in the 2nd Congressional District. You know, most people expect him to win easily. But if there's a big blue wave, you know, my prediction is if George Holding loses, then obviously that would be a nightmare night for Republicans because they'd probably be losing all over the country. So it is a kind of a bellwether state. A bellwether district to watch in the sense of George Holding loses, that'll be disastrous. It means massive losses probably for Republicans at the congressional in the U.S. House of Representatives. So it's a race to watch. It's been moved from likely to lean, and I think Holding. You know, we're gonna probably have some polling on Holding at some, maybe probably a flash poll or something.
Likely. I mean, so we already did flash polls of NC9 and NC13,
right,
which are
Dan McCready.
Dan McCready and Mark Harris, that's NC9, yep. And then NC13 is Ted Budd and Kathy Manning, as well as two other candidates, a Libertarian and Green Party. So we're going to even revisit those ones because that was done in June. So things are changing, public opinion's changing, not to mention the Mark Harris polling that we did actually started. The survey went out the same day that the story broke about Mark Harris making some comments just from a previous 2013 sermon, and you know, everybody was freaked out.
Yeah,
so
definitely freaked out.
Yes.
Except for me, I did not freak out about that.
No, Ray was like smashing and turning over tables like Jesus from the Bible. And
yep.
No.
And Holding's running against Linda Coleman, who has lost twice to Dan Forrest in the past. So, you know, if Holding loses, I don't think it's going to be because Linda Coleman was this great candidate, but it's just because of this massive blue wave has, you know, swept a lot of Republicans out to sea, so to speak. So Linda Coleman, you know, is not seen as necessarily this strong candidate, but, she could benefit from this blue wave, so it'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, and you and I talked about this earlier. If anything, if there is a blue wave and people, even that seems as secure as George Holding did, were to lose, is there a chance that maybe this is more of an indictment on Congress or the House not doing, following their responsibilities to rein in spending? I know that that's maybe a peripheral issue for some people. Polling has indicated that immigration might be a bigger federal issue and things like that. But, you know, there's something to be said about Congress doing their job. No, there's a lot to be said about Congress doing their job when it comes to managing taxpayer money correctly in our budget, and both you and I are pretty disenchanted at the moment
I think it's you know, I mentioned this before in a conversation with you. Mark Meadows came to the CLC event a few years ago.
That's our conservative leadership conference.
Yeah,
our
and everybody
conference.
Should attend. It's a really great networking event and just kind of a cool to go and see the speeches and go to talk to different people from across the state, activists, and you've got politicians that show up and talk. It's a great event. Anyways, before I worked for CivitTalk and was working in media, I went to that event and saw Mark Meadows get up and basically say that we're not going to do anything on spending in the near future. And that to me was just very disheartening. Meadows has been a guy that has talked about the importance of deficit reduction and curtailing spending. I mean, he was a big reason why Republicans got rid of Speaker Buck Boehner. So, you know, he's been a powerful figure in the Freedom Caucus, a leader in the Freedom Caucus. And to see him just kind of get up and admit, well, we're not going to be able to tackle spending right now, was just disheartening. And it just shows that we've got a lot of politicians, and I'm not putting an indictment on Meadows, but just a lot of politicians in the House that are not willing to sacrifice and make the difficult decisions on spending and do anything. I mean, we saw this in the Senate, too, with Paul Ryan, who tried to get Planned Parenthood defunded and was defeated by several Republicans.
Paul.
Yeah, Rand Paul. What did I say?
Paul Ryan.
Okay. Yeah, Rand Paul.
He's
one of the senators I like a lot, and he got up and tried to defund Planned Parenthood, and he put out a good video of hey, it's Republicans who are trying to sabotage this bill.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. So if one Republican or one Democrat alone, they can't make all the policy changes they want in Congress. They have to learn to work together. But when you see the collective kind of just, you know, sighing in resignation because certain things just can't get done, there's cause for concern, and you're half tempted to just do things to shake it up a bit to see if some new life, fresh blood can be infused. But on the other hand, it takes a lot of time to relationship build so that you can begin to build these broader coalitions that can actually get policy enacted. And it's messy. It is something that, you know, a lot of Americans are disenchanted with. Or I read a stat earlier today. I think only 16% of millennials are interested in politics. I think part of that is obviously just a lack of civic education and things like that. But another aspect of it is we see a lot of just huffing and puffing coming out of Washington, but not a lot of action. Not that Congress was ever designed to create laws that were immediately implemented. No, it's a slow process for a reason. But when it comes to trillions and trillions of dollars of debt that we are racking up on the backs of future generations, there's a problem and it needs to be
absolutely
addressed.
And I think there's a lot of Trump supporters, and Trump hasn't been good on the budget, hasn't been good on the debt. I mean, he's increased those measurements. But I would say there's a lot of Trump supporters that, you know, may not show up in this election because Trump's not on the ballot. And they may look and say, hey, I don't know if I can, you know, I feel kind of, you know, Republicans are just as much of the swamp as Democrats, which is true to speak, is truly true to some degree. So I think they could show up, or they may not show up and be a little bit more ambivalent about what's going on because they kind of look and say, hey, Trump's not on the ballot, so I'm not going to go up and support these guys who really aren't doing anything for me and who I'm disillusioned with to get go. So it'd be interesting to see what happens in the election. I mean, we're getting close.
Yeah, we are.
It's really going to heat up after Labor Day. So we'll have all the polling.
Buckle up your seatbelt.
We'll have all the polling here at Civitas. You can come to our event. It's at the
North Raleigh Hilton on September 20th. Yep, 11:45 to 1.
This is why it's important to have Brooke on the podcast.
My little contribution here. No, so you go to Facebook or at Civitas Institute. You can find our events section on our Facebook page. Go ahead and hit follow and like on our Facebook, and you'll be able to see updates on who is going to be speaking at the poll lunch, if there's any changes to the schedule and things like that. So you can do that, or just go to nccivitas.org. Either way, we've got you covered, and we'll make sure to help answer any questions you have about the poll lunch, but also help you easily purchase those tickets. It's $15 a ticket, and it's going to be all of these poll lunches leading up to the elections will be incredibly insightful. It will help keep your ears to the rail so that you know what to expect, and you'll get a better insider look at what sort of messaging is working when it comes to how these politicians are reaching out to their constituents, and you'll see some results of how that is actually impacting these likely voters. So,
and check out our Facebook page, because next week we're going to start live streaming our podcast, so the female audience will probably tick up rapidly and dramatically.
They're all going to want to see Ray.
Yep. So
I'm sure.
I'm glad you knew that. I'm glad that you.
I believe you've spoken about this before.
I was trying to be humble and just sort of like hint at it just a little bit, but Brooke came out and just said what everybody was thinking. So
pretty much, I'm good for saying what everyone else is thinking. But yes, we are going to Facebook Live starting next week. So next Thursday afternoon, I will put a notice on our Facebook page so you can just be on the lookout for that and make sure, yep, you don't miss Ray's beautiful face on Facebook Live. So let's go ahead and transition, because this is going to get awkward if we don't. Teen Vogue. Not that that's not awkward, as if, you know, a grown woman such as
awkward,
myself
Brooke.
Is reading it. No, I actually do not read Teen Vogue. even when I was a teenager, it was too expensive. They were like,
that's
$5.
Not what our web history reports at Civitas. That Brooke,
I'm always
has a
on
lot
Teen
of Teen Vogue.
Vogue
hits.
Yeah. So anyways, ha ha ha. The great Teen Vogue article. If you're wanting to learn how to be super woke, and if you don't know what woke is, that means that you are completely awakened to the reality that nothing is really reality.
Brooke is one
unless
of those woke moms. She's always lecturing me in the office.
I'm the social justice warrior for Ray, just to make sure he stays PC. So anyways, this article by Teen Vogue, I actually thought it was really disturbing, but sadly not surprising. It is entitled How to Use Gender Neutral Words, and it's marketed and focused towards those youth that are just getting ready to go back to school, which is most of them. And the way that this article kicks off is gender inclusive language isn't typically something you learn in school, but its use is incredibly important to make life easier for non-binary peers. Yes, I did say non-binary. I don't know if you know what that is, but if you don't identify as a boy or as a girl, you are non-binary. So this is something, it's becoming increasingly difficult to navigate this whole gender fluid environment that we're living in now, because things change. And so not only is it now LGBT, it's LGBTQ+. And, you know, things are ever evolving on this front. But is it any wonder when you're unhinged from truth, there is, you know, the expanse is wide and vast, and whatever you can come up with to determine and define your identity, people encourage you in it in the mainstream. And that's scary. It's sad. And it's actually not healthy for these youth. There have been pediatricians that have spoken out against this, psychologists that have, that said this is detrimental to children, to try to get them on hormone blockers and lend to their confusion by just promoting, like, okay, a little boy likes a pink backpack, and so all of a sudden we're wanting to send him to counseling so that way he can learn to embrace his femininity and be a girl. You know, I mean, people are taking these huge leaps when it comes to this gender conversation, and it's sad because there are a lot of confused children out there nowadays.
Brooke, I can really relate to this story because I felt like when I was little, I was a big Superman fan, but after watching Wonder Woman, I always wanted to be Superman because I would dress up like Superman, and I got some stitches because I dove through some like glass plates or glass windows and stuff. But also after watching Wonder Woman, I wanted to wonder what it would be like to be Wonder Woman. So I feel like I really relate to the story somewhere.
Let's just say it's good you didn't grow up in 2018, Ray.
That's true.
Because your parents, what did your mom say? Do you remember? Did you ever tell her you wanted to be Wonder
Woman?
No, I
think I just kept it to myself, but I mean... you know, I just kind of relate to the story a little bit. So I feel like I'm woke. I'm sufficiently woke.
You're sufficiently woke, Ray. Well, I think that you might not want to tell your wife that you used to want to be Wonder Woman.
Well, but I wanted to be Superman first. I just sort of, you know, thought on the side. What would it be like to be Wonder Woman?
No, you know what, though? Kids think in ways like that. It doesn't...
I'm so glad my mom didn't do any of this stuff to me. Because I remember, like, trying on my high heels at, like, you know... Three or four, and
my mom's high heels,
around, you know, the house. And I'm glad that someone didn't come in, counselors didn't come and go, whoa, he's got gender dysphoria, he's confused.
Right. Well, and gender dysphoria is an actual condition, but it needs to be helped and help a person embrace the gender that they were born with, rather than going through radical surgeries and hormone puberty blockers and things like that. It needs to be addressed in a healthful way. Ryan Anderson from Heritage Foundation writes a lot about this and does an excellent job. But I was a major tomboy growing up. Mm. And I remember just that was the style that I liked. I really didn't want to grow up at that time. And so I felt like that was the safest way to protect myself from growing up. And just imagining what children nowadays go through, even if there is a hint of confusion. And we've got kids, and we do our best to shield them from some of these negative effects that come with this, the transgender moment. I would say it's not even a movement. Well, it is a movement, but I would say it's a moment in history, and hopefully people will begin to wake up again and realize, okay, this isn't healthy. Transgender youth actually have way higher suicide rates too. And some will argue, well, that's because they're not accepted. No, they're very much accepted.
I wonder how much, Brooke, you'll probably know more about this than I do, but I wonder how much this has to do with we live in a society of excess, because I feel like you don't hear, and it may not just be because, you know, it's not diagnosed, but we don't hear about some of these problems in more underdeveloped areas, or we don't hear about these sometimes in inner cities as much.
Yeah.
It just seems to be like a upper middle class sort of phenomenon.
When you have a lot of resources and not... Just because someone's upper middle class doesn't mean that they are self-absorbed, but I'm saying you have more time to look at just activities and having fun and spending time with your peer group and stuff, rather than just hitting your nose to the grind and working hard. It creates this extra time. Idleness is the devil's play. I think that used to be an old statement. And hey, I think there might be something to that, where we're just constantly just spoon-fed entertainment all the time, and so this selfie culture and everything is just about me, me, me. But it's also not only just about me, me, me. It's unhinged from truth. My truth doesn't have to necessarily be your truth and things like that. So, yeah, the Teen Vogue article, they make some interesting recommendations. So instead of saying ladies and gentlemen, you just need to say folks, but they spell it F-O-L-X. So that's really interesting. If something is man-made, you should actually say machine-made, synthetic, or artificial. And, oh, get this one, Ray. Ray, since you are a parent, you'll appreciate this one. You say pibbling instead of father or mother. Pibbling.
No, stop. Please.
And you can be, if you've got a niece or nephew, they are nibbling.
I feel like I'm not going to call my nieces nibbling. It just sounds too dehumanizing. It's almost like, sounds like they're just a crumb or something.
Like a crumb. Like, let me nibble on this little crumb.
Like a niblet or something.
It sounds like earthling to me, as if it's this alien language or something. So yeah,
something
weird.
Right out of 1984. And I just think this whole movement to deconstruct and redefine our language is really, really, it's just a dramatic, threatening sort of endeavor that's going on. I don't think you can do better in our language than Shakespeare and the King James Bible, some of these great works of literature that really elevated our culture and our, just Western civilization to begin with. So I just think it's just sort of ludicrous to suggest that we should change our language. We have our language for a reason. It's a part of our culture.
Well, words matter, right? C.S. Lewis wrote a great essay on this many years ago. He passed away, I believe, in the 1940s, but
1963.
Oh, you're right. He did the same day that JFK passed.
JFK and then another author that's escaping my mind.
Oh, and I'm like the hugest C.S. Lewis fangirl. I can't believe you all forgive me, please. But anyways, he wrote this during the 1940s with regard to just the power of words and how language has changed and the importance. Words are houses that ideas live in. And so ideas, we know, have consequences. And so words really matter because they carry and convey these ideas. And we know that if it's a bad idea, it's going to have bad consequences. So, you know, this whole Teen Vogue article, I laugh about it to some extent, but on the other hand, these people are serious. The ones that wrote it, they mean every bit
of
this.
They're really woke, I guess, bro.
They're really woke, I suppose, but I guess if that's what woke is, I'd rather stay asleep. So
exactly.
Yeah, but there are some people that we could we can admire. I'm not the authors of that Teen Vogue article, but recently in the news, we have been seeing the coverage of John McCain's memorial service and just remembering his life. And Ray actually did a really good job in honoring Senator McCain's memory, but also the memory of numerous other prisoners of war during their stay at the Hanoi Hilton. And can you talk a little bit about your article? It's on acton.org.
Sure. I wrote a piece called John McCain, the Hanoi Hilton, and Public Virtue for the Acton Institute. And what I really tried to focus on was not the politics of John McCain, so to speak, because that's really not important after his death. You can argue about whether he was right or wrong. I think a lot of the media praise of McCain, it's for selfish reasons because they see him as this maverick that went against the Republican Party sometimes. And I don't think that's really the important lesson to learn from his life and death. I tried to focus not just on John McCain, but some of the men that served with him. And one of the things that he really stressed, or these writers really stressed after coming out of the POW camp, was the dangers of secularism, the dangers of the materialist society, because they had 8 years to really focus in those prison cells when they were tortured by the North Vietnamese, to focus on the greatness of America. And what I really tried to get at was just addressing the importance of servant leadership in America. We kind of talked about that today when it comes to federal spending, but the importance of putting yourself before the Republic, and these men did when they were suffering for our country. Several of them died. I mentioned Lance Sejon and Ronald Stortz, who were actually tortured to death for their country. And just talking about that message of servant leadership and how it's so important for today, that McCain's political partisan nature is not important, but people like James Stockdale and other leaders in the POW camps who sacrificed so much for America and really stressed the importance of servant leadership for this nation, how important that was. And I think if you just go and read the piece, you'll kind of get a feel for what I was trying to get at, that there's a lot of things more important than politics today. So we thank you for joining us for another edition of CivitTalk, and I can't wait to talk to you all again.
Yeah, so go ahead, check out that article at acton.org, and as always, reach out to us, radio@nccivitas.org. Thank you so much for joining us this week, and we will talk to you soon.